need other social service agencies to take on another syringe exchange. Realistically, Anchorage needs a lot.
A program aimed at helping injection drug users suffers from too much success. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, September 1st. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the governor shows optimism for a future gas line. Lawmakers have doubts.
We also want to be real and objective because it's a big project and it's already cost a lot of money that we don't have.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
4 out of 5 Alaskans addicted to heroin started by using prescription opioids. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Safely getting rid of unused opioid medications prevents anyone from taking them without permission, which could endanger them and lead to consequences with law enforcement. Find out more at opioids.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
The state of Alaska and ExxonMobil are still fighting over one of the largest gas fields on the North Slope. This week, the Alaska Department of Natural Resources rejected part of the company's plan to expand its Point Thompson field. The field has been in dispute for decades, and after a 7-year legal battle, the state and ExxonMobil settled in 2012, laying out a roadmap for development. ExxonMobil had to build a production facility. Right now, it produces light oil. But according to the settlement, they have to expand it to producing natural gas. And they have until the end of 2019 to decide how they were going to expand it or turn some leases back over to the state. Now the state is arguing that ExxonMobil isn't giving it enough information to prove that it will be ready to expand by that deadline. This is a unique situation for the state and the company because the Point Thompson development is being fulfilled according to the terms of a legal settlement, not the state's normal regulatory process for a field. A spokesperson from ExxonMobil, Aaron Strike, says the company got the state's letter but hasn't had a chance to review it.
What we can say is that we have been and will continue to be in full compliance with the Point Thompson settlement agreement.
The company has until October 13th to respond to the state. A DNR spokesperson said the state couldn't agree to a recorded interview on the pending legal dispute. For the last 2 months, the state's Gasline Corporation has asked potential customers and investors in the state-led project to formally show interest in the massive pipeline project without being bound by a contract. It has been a chance for the state to get an idea of just how much the global market wants Alaska's gas. And while the state corporation and the governor are optimistic, some lawmakers aren't sure there has been enough interest to continue pouring state money into the $45 billion project. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Rasha McChesney has more.
Last year, Governor Bill Walker told a reporter at the Alaska Dispatch News that he would give the state-run LNG pipeline project a year to find its footing and a market for the state's North Slope gas reserves. And it's been a busy year. Walker says once the state started meeting with other countries, sovereign to sovereign, things really heated up.
I think it really started with the meeting with President Xi, President of China, when he came to Alaska, expressed his interest in LNG to China.
Walker and members of Alaska's Gasoline Development Corporation have zipped back and forth to Washington, D.C., and Singapore, and Korea. They opened an office in Tokyo. And Walker says he's encouraged by what he's hearing.
Never in my wildest dreams would I have thought we would have this kind of market engagement. And again, it's the first time we've really engaged market to market. We've always done it through somebody else, a producer or someone who has a competing project elsewhere in the world. And now we're doing it sort of sovereign to sovereign. And I think it's been very, very, very successful.
But he stopped short of saying whether he thinks the state corporation should go to the legislature for more funding this year.
We'll look and see if that see if that's warranted or not. It's probably too soon to say on that.
As Walker's soft deadline approaches, the state corporation tasked with finding customers and investors to build the mega project says it has gotten some good news. Last week, they reported signing confidentiality agreements across 6 different markets. The federal government says the project qualifies for a program that streamlines the permitting process. And the corporation also got an opinion from the IRS that says it's likely to be tax exempt. Earlier this year, the corporation signed a Memorandum of Understanding, or MOU, with a Korean gas corporation. It's basically an agreement that the two corporations could work together as the project develops. Still, the project is a tough sell to lawmakers who control where the state's money goes. Some, like Senate Republican Kevin Meyer, say it's not clear if any of the steps the corporation or the governor have taken are going to make the project cheaper or more attractive to investors.
That's kind of the big unknown, is what does that apply to and how much does it apply to? And, you know, I know the governor kind of made a big, big thing about it, but, you know, he also made a big thing out of signing those MOUs, which are basically meaningless.
So far, the state and its former oil company partners have spent more than $500 million studying the project, trying to figure out if it's feasible.
We want to be excited and positive and optimistic about the project, but yet we also want to be real and objective, because it's a big project and it's already cost a lot of money that we don't have.
Last year, both the House and Senate mulled proposals to strip millions from the state corporation's budget. Meyer says lawmakers just don't have enough information to know if the state can afford to keep pushing the project forward. And on the other side of the aisle, House Democrat Garen Tarr agrees. Tarr says she thinks that patience is wearing thin in the legislature, in part because of the state's multi-billion dollar budget deficit. As lawmakers cut funds for education, power in rural areas, and student scholarships, Tarr says it can be hard to justify spending millions of dollars on a project they just can't be sure will ever be built.
Can we afford to do it right now while we're still trying to fix our other major financial problems? And is now the right time given the market conditions? We know that that resource is not going to go anywhere. It's going to be there, and I fully believe it will be developed. So it's a matter of, you know, the timing.
The corporation is supposed to give a progress report to the legislature in September. And Tarr expects that meeting will be full of detailed questions about just who is interested in Alaska's gas and just how much more money the state will be expected to fork over to develop the project. She says she hopes they'll get some answers. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Rasha McChesney in Juneau.
The state's main syringe exchange can't keep up with the demand for clean needles among injection drug users. The Alaska AIDS Assistance Association, or 4As, collects used syringes in its Anchorage office and gives out new supplies, primarily to people using heroin and other opioids. The idea is to reduce the spread of blood-borne diseases and direct people abusing drugs toward recovery options. But Development Director Petra Davis says starting next week, they're scaling back hours after struggling to keep up with increasing demand.
It has become unrealistic to expect that 4As can sustain this alone. We need other health agencies. We need other addiction agencies. We need other social service agencies to take on another syringe exchange. Realistically, Anchorage needs a lot.
As opioid abuse continues to surge in Alaska, 4A's syringe exchange program is a victim of its own success. On a busy day in Anchorage, the small office at the edge of the Spinard neighborhood will see 150 clients a day coming to get needles. Davis says between this fiscal year and the last, the number of individuals coming in went up by 37%, driven in part by new users.
In FY17 alone, we saw over 1,500 individuals who expressed that it was their first time using the exchange.
Davis says the demand for the syringe exchange has overwhelmed their other services. 4As was set up to help people living with HIV/AIDS. But the increase in drug users coming into the exchange has made some existing clients uncomfortable.
What made us open our eyes to that something needed to change in the syringe exchange was our HIV care clients. Some of them no longer felt comfortable coming into the office, and we are first and foremost set up to care for those clients that are living with HIV.
4As is cutting the syringe exchange hours from 40 to 17 per week, mostly in the afternoons. There is no other program filling the gap in Anchorage. Davis says that will allow staff more time and capacity for other services related to HIV/AIDS assistance and prevention. The program's reduced hours go into effect on Tuesday. The only other similar programs on the road system are in Homer and Fairbanks, both of which are much smaller. 4A's runs another exchange in Juneau. Anchorage has experienced an increase in business this year, despite the state being in a recession exacerbated by low oil prices. KTUU reported Thursday that both local and national businesses have been setting up shop in Anchorage. Bill Popp, president of Anchorage Economic Development Corporation, says the city has experienced a 4% increase in building permits this year compared to last year. Popp says the city feels it is getting to the bottom of this recessionary cycle. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a fight to save family-owned cabins in the Tongass.
If I didn't do everything in my power to help them keep the rights to that cabin, I would never forgive myself.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration provide information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
Three guides are charged with illegal hunting activity and predator control in Wrangell St. Elias National Park and Preserve. According to a release from the U.S. Attorney's Office, 44-year-old Jeffrey Harris of Washington State, 72-year-old Dale Lackner of Haines, and 47-year-old Casey Richardson of Montana provided illegal doll sheep hunts to Lower 48 residents out of the Ptarmigan Lake Lodge in 2014 and 2015. The indictment also alleges the men laced bait piles with xylitol, a sweetener that's toxic to canines, to kill wolves and coyotes. Xylitol is also poisonous to birds. The men face maximum sentences of 5 years in jail and fines of up to $250,000. Federal and state law enforcement agencies coordinated on an investigation that resulted in the indictments. Golden Valley Electric Association's Board of Directors approved a multi-million dollar plan on Monday to repair the Healy 2 power plant. Two board members voted against the proposal, saying they've got concerns about the coal-fired plant design and cost. KUAC's Tim Ellis has the story.
Most of the board members in Monday's meeting expressed concerns over the problem-plagued Healy 2 power plant, but only two voted against a management proposal to spend up to $20 million to repair the system that feeds coal into the power plant's boiler. Tom DeLong told his fellow directors that he's concerned about the unproven technology built into the 50-megawatt facility, which he says is the only one of its kind.
Everyone knows I'm not a fan of coal, but what I'm really voting against is the technology.
DeLong also says he's disappointed with the contractor GVEA hired to evaluate the system. Director Gary Newman also voted against the measure, but he and DeLong both declined to talk about their votes on tape after the meeting. Newman says board members were concerned about the $175 million Golden Valley has spent on Healy 2 since buying it from the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority in 2013. The plant ran for about 8 months before it was shut down in March of 2016 after an explosion caused by a buildup of coal dust in the plant's coal handling system. It was restarted after GVEA spent $1 million to repair that damage, then shut down again in November after another smaller explosion. The resolution approved by the board Monday authorizes spending up to $20 million to fix that problem. Newman says Golden Valley increased its initial $10 million estimate for the project after getting more information last week about the scope of work required to get the power plant operational. Hollis Hall, who sits on the utilities member advisory committee, told the board that some of GVEA's ratepayers also have concerns over Healy 2.
Most of the members just wonder when we'll be able to get Healy 2 on board. It's taken a long time.
Hall said in an interview after the meeting that members want Healy 2 up and going because they believe the coal-fired electricity it would generate will reduce their monthly bills. In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
Earlier this year, Governor Bill Walker issued a disaster declaration to combat opioid abuse in Alaska. Since then, more resources have been dedicated to the fight. This summer, some of those efforts aimed at getting the attention of the fishing community. KHNS's Abby Collins reports.
We haven't had something of this magnitude before.
That's Public Safety Commissioner Walt Monaghan. He spoke with KHNS during a visit to Haines.
I'm an old guy. I've been an old cop for a long time. And there were surges in the 60s and 80s and 90s with different types of drugs, but they usually have flared out usually by this time. So this one is a long one.
This summer, commercial fishermen throughout the state received an unusual letter from Monaghan warning of the dangers of opioid abuse. The letter warns of the devastating effects of opioid abuse and the state laws against carrying drugs on the water.
It's not just about fishermen. It's about lumberjacks. It's about concrete pourers and everyone else out there. We're working with the pharmacies. We're working with doctors. We're trying to get this thing, as arms around as many people as we can. And then hopefully that the more that we grab and have them join us in this effort, the more we're going to save.
Sam Cotton is the commissioner of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. He explained why the state is conducting this kind of outreach to fishermen.
You know, there's a lot of people that I've heard from, especially in smaller fishing communities, that have expressed concern about especially young people in their communities that are struggling with drug use in general and opioids in particular.
Though the letter was sent specifically to fishermen, the commissioners say it's part of a wider effort and they're not singling out one industry.
What we were all trying to do is reach out to as many different types of populations as we could to heighten the awareness of the situation that we have with opioids and other drugs.
Cotton says commercial fishing is already a dangerous job.
There are a lot of even this year we've had deaths and a lot of injuries, and so any impairment, alcohol or other drugs, in addition to opioids, also raise the danger level on a fishing boat or in a lot of other industries as well. But we all know that the fishing industry can be a dangerous place to work, and drug use or alcohol abuse aboard a vessel increases that danger.
Monaghan says the governor's disaster declaration has allowed for a greater focus on opioids.
He declared it a disaster, just like an earthquake or a forest fire. That way we can put more resources. We have biweekly meetings on it. We have updates. We try to brainstorm everything that we can to get the word out to everyone else.
Monaghan and Cotton hope their outreach will help commercial fishermen avoid adding risks to an already dangerous job. In Haines, I'm Abby Collins.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
First National Bank Alaska. For nearly a century, First National has been Alaska's community bank. Learn how experience and local knowledge make the difference at fnbalaska.com.
Opioids are common prescription pain relievers and must be used properly to avoid danger. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Safely getting rid of unused opioid medication prevents children and pets from accidental poisoning and protects the environment. Information about safe opioid storage and proper disposal is at opioids.alaska.gov. This message is sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Ketchikan, Kotzebue, Dillingham,
Sitka, Chugiak, Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon, Wrangell,
Barrow, Unalaska, Dutch Harbor, Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, the family cabin. In the 1980s, a group of privately owned cabins were grandfathered into the Tongass National Forest in southeast Alaska after the area was designated as wilderness. The catch? Once the cabins were passed down one generation, they would be removed or destroyed. One family in Petersburg is leading the charge to save their historic cabin and others like it. KFSK's Nora Sachs has more.
Jacob Hammer chomps down an overgrown trail on Kuprinoff Island, a few miles north of Petersburg. He stops where a creek forks and then narrows.
A
Right. We're here. We're almost here. That one's the Hammer family cabin.
Hammer scrambles up the bank and onto the porch of a tiny red cabin nestled against the trees.
There's a very good chance we're within 100 yards of a bear right now. This is their creek right here.
This cabin has been in the Hammer family since the late 1950s, when Jacob's grandfather got a permit from the Forest Service, floated it up the creek, and planted it on this plot of land inside the Tongass National Forest. Hammer just turned 39. He's been coming here his entire life, first with his parents, now with his own kids. He also served in the Marines. For decades, this cabin has been a refuge for him, his father and brother, also veterans, and others healing from the scars of war.
You know, it doesn't fix anything, but it's definitely a place where you come back and it feels like your soul's batteries have been recharged, especially for after things like that. You know, when you just need that time, then there's no other place that lets you shut down so effectively.
It really feels like you're in the wilderness here, and you are. This area was designated as the Petersburg Creek Duncan Saltchuk Wilderness in 1980, when the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act was passed. Under ANILCA, permits for pre-existing private cabins are allowed to be transferred once by the original owner. After that, the cabin can't stay. When that time came for Hammer's grandfather, he had to make a tough choice. Both of his grandsons were deployed overseas, and the family worried they might not come back, so the permit went to their father, Kenneth Hammer, instead. Last September, Kenneth passed away suddenly at the age of 66. In May, the U.S. Forest Service informed the family that the cabin had to be removed or destroyed.
It's like taking away, you know, when everything else is bad in the world, then this is your one good thing. You know, a couple days up here is, just imagining losing that was kind of hard to take.
Petersburg District Ranger Dave Zimmerman is sympathetic to the particulars of the Hammer family situation.
It's always difficult when that type of thing happens, at least for me and my staff. It's awkward and sad.
But he also says that as an employee of the Forest Service, a federal agency, there's not much wiggle room.
I mean, the real basic answer is it's kind of raw, but I'm hired to follow the laws that set out. So the law says we have to follow this procedure, and that's what I have to do.
But not everyone here has been willing to accept that position. When fellow Petersburg resident Mike Schwartz heard the Hammer cabin was in jeopardy, he felt like it was his own dogs in the fight.
I've had a cabin taken away from me, and I didn't deserve it nearly as much as they do. If I didn't do everything in my power to help them keep the rights to that cabin, I would never forgive myself.
Schwartz convinced the Hammers to jump into action. He helped them circulate a petition in Petersburg and online. Over the summer, they gathered more than 1,400 signatures in support of saving the cabin, mostly from locals. Jacob Hammer says that initially, speaking up made him uncomfortable.
I struggled with it at first. You know, why would we get a special cabin? Why just us?
But he sees it in a different light now. It's not about protecting private property or politics. It's about trying to preserve a way of life that's unique to Southeast Alaska and passing on a connection with the land to future generations. According to the Forest Service, there are 83 privately owned cabins remaining in the Tongass National Forest, which fall under the same one-time permit transfer rule. 7 more have already been removed. Mike Schwartz again.
So this began as a fight and a battle for the two boys to get their permit extended, at least another generation. And what it's turned into is a battle for all the cabins.
While the Hammers and their allies might be the squeakiest wheel, it's an issue that touches a larger number of Alaskans. That's one of the reasons they've been able to get attention from some members of the Alaska congressional delegation. Matt Shukaro is a spokesman for U.S. Representative Don Young.
For Congressman Young, this is a classic example of an agency having the ability to help someone, to help an Alaskan or a constituent, but choosing not to.
Young and State Senator Bert Stedman have both written letters to the Secretary of Agriculture, Sonny Perdue, who oversees the Forest Service. They're asking him to review that section of ANILCA and use his authority to intervene and change the policy. According to Shukaro, Young and Perdue have spoken about the matter, but there's no further decision at this time. Meanwhile, District Ranger Dave Zimmerman says that no one's cabin is being burned down, and he wants to work with the family to come up with a plan.
So if it's still muddied up above me, what we're going to do, not do, from the national level, then I'm not going to do anything here until I have solid direction to go.
For now, the status of the Hammer family's cabin remains in limbo, with no clear end in sight. For AK, I'm Nora Sachs.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week we're hearing from Demry Mebben in Anchorage. Mebben moved here 4 years ago from Texas and just started his last year at UAA.
Whether you look at like my role in Model United Nations, as the Ombudsman in Student Government, or even the job that I have right now with the Emerging Leaders Program, these opportunities would not be available for me at a bigger university or in a bigger city. And if they were available, I'd have to definitely fight tooth and nail to get that position. I'm also studying for my LSATs. I just finished up an internship with the mayor's office. I've stayed quite busy while I've been here. I don't see myself just staying in one occupation. I think that ultimately the main principle behind my life will be to give, and that'll be to give as much as possible. My internship with the mayor's office was actually through AmeriCorps. Each student got set up with a different department. I was lucky enough to be hooked up with the police department here in town, and I was responsible for getting research from different people that lived within Fairview, Mountain View, and Spinard to see how the police could police better in those areas. I worked with another student, Sevi Shepherd, who was in the justice program, talking to those residents within Fairview about their issues that they weren't able to voice prior to Sevi and I knocking on their door felt great, because these people had issues that they felt as though their municipality didn't care. I think being able to articulate your problem is step one, and hopefully step two comes from the mayor's office and comes from the police department from the data we gave. I came up here for a what if, a perhaps. I kind of came up here slightly on a whim. And I'd say that decision has shaped my life for the better. And this decision and this move up to Alaska was completely necessary. So one word would be necessary. And multiple words would be, I would do it again and again.
Demry Mebben lives in Anchorage. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Nora Sachs and Wesley Early. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. We had reports tonight from Rasha McChesney in Juneau, Zachariah Hughes in Anchorage, Dan Bross and Tim Ellis in Fairbanks, and Abby Collins in Haines. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, and I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, taking pride in its strong ties to Alaska's communities and in the 40 years of Alaska operations.
4 out of 5 Alaskans addicted to heroin started by using prescription opioids. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Safely getting rid of unused opioid medications prevents anyone from taking them without permission, which could endanger them and lead to consequences with law enforcement. Find out more at opioids.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.